Hello and welcome to the Interior Design Business. My name is Jeff Hayward and I'm here with my co-host, Susie Rumbold, Creative Director of Tessuto Interiors and a past president of the British Institute of Interior Design. We're here in front of a live audience of designers at Design Central Southwest at the Aztec Hotel and Spa in Bristol. And today we are going to be talking about taking the interior outside. Susie.
In the 1920s, Lord Rothschild, talking to a city gardening club, said, "No garden, however small, should ever be without its 2 acres of rough woodland." A century later, the reality for most of us is rather different. Today, any home is fortunate if it includes even the most minuscule terrace or patio, and these spaces have never been more appreciated and cherished by their owners. Intimately connected with the interiors of our homes, we use these places to relax, eat, socialise and connect with nature, and we appreciate the contribution that they make to our well-being and mental health. But who should be trusted with the design of these significant spaces? Is it the role of the interior designer or the role of the garden designer? And should these relate to the interior or the exterior of the host building? Welcome to the Interior Design Business.
Today, we are lucky enough to be joined by two very special guests, Caroline Polk of Ashton House Design and Catherine Bishop of Cornish Interiors. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Caroline and Catherine, before we begin, could you possibly each give us a brief introduction to yourself and your business? Caroline, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I will do. Hi, I'm Caroline. I have Ashton House Design. We are based in Ashburton in Devon. I don't know if you know that area. But I started the business just over 3 decades ago. I was working in London before then and returned to my West Country roots, where I set up our interior design studio and business. And we now employ, there's 8 of us in our business, and we work throughout the Southwest and beyond. Normally all of our projects start in the Southwest, but we get taken all over the country and internationally as well. And we work in residential and commercial settings. We do quite a lot of spa designs. We're currently working on a brewery, so all sorts. So it's really interesting and varied, and we love what we do.
And Catherine.
So yeah, I'm Catherine. I run Cornish Interiors, and so two things. I run Cornish Interiors, and then I teach on the interior design degree at Arts University Plymouth. So I spend part of my week teaching students how to be an interior designer or an interior stylist, and then I spend part of my week running Cornish Interiors, my practice, which I've been doing for about 20 years. And we design a mix of lots of private housing, a bit of work for like the National Trust. I've done hotels, offices, mostly now private housing and kind of a bit of show home and developer work. And ditto, I would say, with lots of our work is Southwest, but then those clients take us wherever their other properties might be. So we've been lucky enough to design in New York, in Barbados, in some nice exotic sounding locations. All over, and ditto. Like I'm born and brought up in Cornwall. So that's where my kind of roots are. Controversially, Cornish Interiors based in Plymouth. Over the Tamar.
Does that mean the jam goes on top or underneath?
Oh, always jam first. No one shout at me for that. Jam first. Caroline, I'll scrap.
That's not going to mean anything to our American listeners.
And I hear, Catherine, that you've taken on a new responsibility recently in the Southwest. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I have. So I'm... when Susie said about being previous president of the BIID, I'm now a regional ambassador for the Southwest, for the British Institute of Interior Design. They've just decided to get regional ambassadors to cover more of the regions, and I'm the regional ambassador for the Southwest region.
So you're out there connecting designers with what the BIID offers and everything good about that?
Yeah, exactly. There's a pretty good network in the Southwest for interior designers. We kind of, lots of us communicate a lot anyway, but this is sort of formalising it, I guess, a bit.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Good. Excellent. So first question, Caroline, come to you.
Yes.
Are modern gardens merely outside rooms?
Oh, I don't think so. I think that you have to relate the inside to the outside, and I think that's what we talk a lot about when we're first working on a project, is how those spaces are going to interact. We think particularly about how a door is going to open and how the floor is going to continue inside and outside. And I think for me, that's one of the kind of key things. So creating something that you really want to go to, that your eye is led to, that's got some intrigue. I mean, it often depends on the size. We're really fortunate in Devon. A lot of our projects do have quite large outside spaces. So that kind of makes it easier in a way, because you're kind of like creating lots of rooms almost. So creating something that's your first room to kind of go to. I don't know if, I mean, I always think of Sissinghurst when I think of this, because it's just so wonderful. It has all those rooms that are like planted. So there's like a white garden, and, you know, and I've always loved that idea. Not that we work at that sort of level, but it's just that idea of going from one room to another, I think, is a really nice way of thinking of your outside space.
So a series of rooms rather than perhaps one.
Yeah, and just not having everything all presented to you straight away, about that intrigue and about having areas that, you know, like it might be a sculpture, it might be something lit, it might be a water feature that leads you, like a rill or something like that. You know, so having these things that take you out and lead you, but then you turn a corner and there's like a lovely surprise. And I love that. You know, there's like a cabin or a loggia or something that's like, wow, I'm going to go and visit that now. So having these points of interest, I think, is really important.
So something a bit more sophisticated and complex, perhaps, than we might think.
Yeah, I like that unexpected idea of like a reveal.
Which is a bit like in an interior. Mm. And, you know, it's that idea of like, it's not all there in front of you straight away. It's sort of, it's the layers, and it's about kind of unpeeling all those different elements.
You talk about that kind of hierarchy of space, don't you, in an interior. So there's the sort of first space in your home where not everyone's allowed in, but lots of people are allowed in, sort of the kitchen, the public spaces, and then that hierarchy of spaces, you go back up into finally the bedroom, where you'd hope not everyone is allowed in. But yes, a bit more private. So I guess the garden, you could follow that same theme,
totally.
Right?
And people kind of like maybe retaining something that's very personal to them that they actually don't want lots of people going to.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a client who's just done a library for her, and it's like, I don't want anyone coming in this library. This is my space. So it's the same in a garden. It could be like, this is my special place. I've got this little shepherd's hut tucked around there. That's for me to write in. No one else allowed, thank you.
Oh, so I think it's the man shed.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
And is the garden design usually included as part of the initial design brief? Or is that something that tends to get kind of bolted on later in the project?
So I think I think if you've got a client who starts out this process with a lot of thought, then it should be holistic, right? The whole thing should read together. There's nothing worse, in the same way as you don't want the lighting design to be a completely separate thought to the interior design. It's all got to sit and kind of sing together. That's not always the case though in real life, is it? So, and always the garden's done right at the end, and the project has been on site often, if it's a new build, or even if it's a refurb, it's been on site for kind of a year and a half sometimes. I've literally got a picture in my head of a project we're doing at the moment in Surrey. It's a pigsty, you know. Yeah. So there's been like a cabin for the builders to work in all that time. There's been cranes, so the garden is destroyed, and then it's got to be built back up. So it's often the last thing to get done in a project, but it shouldn't be.
I think you're right. I think it should be done at the same time, but I think the reality is it doesn't.
Yeah.
I think everyone gets so focused on inside because they want to get their living space sorted, that it drags.
It can be an afterthought,
and I've got
right?
exactly the same. I've got a couple of projects where the outside spaces are just, they're awful at the moment. They're just building sites because that's...
But do you ever then suggest to your clients, you know, when you're taking that first brief, you know, what are we doing about the garden?
I don't know about you, but I mean, we often get employed alongside, we'll get employed alongside an architect, a landscape gardener, you know, a gardener, whatever it might be. So that is, we're all employed at the same time.
Yeah.
But I just think sometimes the logistics of it mean that the outside space does slightly follow on, just seems to happen the way. And also, I mean, a lot of our clients are really interested in their gardens, and they're out gardening and designing it themselves anyway, so...
Yeah, we're similar, as in we would normally expect, I mean, my knowledge of plants is shocking. I wouldn't trust me to choose plants that would survive in an outside space. My knowledge of interiors, hopefully, is better. But the outside space, I would definitely put all my faith in, into a garden designer. Landscape designer or garden designer, or potentially a mix of the two. But massive crossover between where... bit like architect and interior designer, where our role stops and their role starts. So definitely we'd want to govern how those finishes from interior lead to exterior, the furniture choices from interior to exterior, if you've got the luxury of outside space enough to have furniture out there. And yeah, kind of how the two work together. And like you were saying, kind of lines of sight out of your property into the garden. And the reverse of it, how are you bringing that exterior into the house?
Back inside.
Yeah, so that you're, we live in a world where nature is, you know, we're inside for something like 90% of our lives, and that's not how we were intended to be. So we need to bring that outside in.
Any tips for stopping those kind of last minute decisions happening, because it is at the end of the project and the client is obviously rushing to get you off site. Yeah. So any advice for how you manage that to make sure the client does think of it at the first meeting?
So I think it's about including that just in this early discussion point of kind of, you know, when you're coming up with concepts, including concepts as an interior designer for exterior furniture, even at that early stage, especially like, and Caroline will be the same, I'm sure you're designing houses that are coastal, they're riverside,
harsh
countryside. Yeah, you've really got to think about that outside space early on. Yeah, because oftentimes, for me anyway, the clients bought the property because they love where it's located.
Of course.
So that's a big part of it.
And what sort of questions are you then asking your client, I mean, about their lifestyle in the garden? I mean, what do you say, Caroline?
Isn't it? I mean, I think it's quite like when we're interrogated about their interiors, to be honest. It's, you know, is it sociable seating? Is it lying? Is it sunbathing? Is it, do you want shelter? You know, do you want places for the children to play? You've got animals. Do you want to include places for, you know, chickens, guinea pigs, rabbits, you know, dogs, all of those things.
Goats. Are you barbecuing?
Are you cooking? Yeah. There's a massive long list. And I think that has to, it's a massive checklist, just like when we're asking about their interior, really.
You're being nosy, aren't you, from the off? You're having learn a lot about your client and their life.
That's our whole job, isn't it? Sometimes way too much information, but yeah. It's good.
Whether
it's
they use a bidet or not.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah. What
do they keep
outside? Inside or outside, Jeff? Yeah.
Well, actually, outside, good point.
Really handy for watering things.
Dog washing. You know, so often we have hot and cold water feeds outside for the animals so that all of that can stay outside.
Or outside showers.
Yeah,
especially in Cornwall.
Ice baths, saunas.
Can't come in off the beach.
Such an immensely long list of things that people might be on their wish list.
And those would be your responsibility, not the designer of gardens?
We would work with probably an architect and the gardener, landscape architect, whatever, just for all of that, for all of those things.
Wow.
So yeah, it is, but you know, we get asked more and more because, you know, we make it our business to know about stuff.
I think there's a distinction between in garden and outdoor spaces generally about the hard landscaping.
Yes.
As opposed to the soft landscaping, which is the planting.
There's the plants, and then there's all the other stuff.
And then there's all the structure and other stuff, which really falls more, I think, or can often fall into the interior designers. Into the interior designer's pot. You've kind of almost answered this question. I was going to ask you whether you thought that gardening was a spectator sport, because I think in cities sometimes it can be. But you've just said that your clients are heavily engaged in the garden.
Not always, but sometimes it can be like literally something they want to look at out of their window and they never plan to touch it.
But then I'm sort of thinking perhaps maybe I turn the question around and rather than sort of saying if it's not a spectator sport, is it more about, have they got time where they're actually, you know, what are the arrangements then I suppose for maintaining the garden? Have they, you know, are they going to have a garden or are they going to do it themselves? And do they cook? Are they going to be growing things?
I think all of those things. And it's a mix, you know, and everyone's different. I mean, so often I'll go and I'll see a client on his tractor mowing the grass because that's their downtime. That's relaxing. You know, it's not the hard graft of like digging up beds and things. But it's like, I want to do that bit. That's my thing.
Or the reverse is they want it done and they want it to look immaculate forever and they never want to touch it. And you're trying to manage their expectations. Yeah. Like, that doesn't
matter. It's a living
plastic
thing.
Plastic plants.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And what about the difference between designing for small gardens and larger spaces? Do you approach it in the same way?
No, I guess it's the same as a small or a large interior. So often with a large garden or a large outside space, as in with a large interior, you're trying to find stuff of the right scale. Because actually, it's quite hard to find furniture big enough for a big property sometimes and play with that scale and ditto with a garden. We've been tasked quite a few times with finding sculpture for gardens or artwork for outside. as in having a focal point, especially I'm thinking of a particular garden in Cornwall that we did right on the beach. The amount of plants that will actually survive in that location is really restricted. It's a rental property, so you haven't got that maintenance happening. So we did beautiful big sculpture as the focal point in the garden. So that's where you are really crossing over, because you've got to get electrics out to that to light it. You might want water feeds out there. So it's a real mix of interior design, landscape architect involvement, architects involved in that, electrician, plumber.
All the services.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, amazing. And from a styles perspective, should the garden always be echoing the interior?
Good question.
I don't think it always has to do. I mean, I think when I thought about that question, I thought of how often you see a really contemporary extension on a more period house, and how fantastic that looks to see. So I think that it's down to taste, isn't it? And kind of what your client's brief might be in terms of how they want those spaces to flow. I mean, I think, like I said about the kind of floor finishing, having something that relates the two is really nice. But then it could be a complete surprise. So I think it could be more interesting, maybe.
And what about the host building? If you have a really interesting host building, you know, would you be then taking elements perhaps from the exterior of the building to play with in some of those spaces, if that makes sense?
I think you've got to have sense of place with it, right? So it doesn't want to feel like this garden or the house has been beamed in from somewhere else. You're drawing your inspiration. Yeah. If it's a garden in Devon, it needs to have some sort of link to...
belong. It might have some lovely kind of walling or something, granite walling that, you know, there'll be things that relate. It might have some lovely staddle stones, you know, things like that, which sort of set it in its place.
Yeah, so you know where you are. And also because the planting... you know, will survive.
Well, yeah,
if you're trying
to
put things in that won't live in that area. So the project we did in Barbados, we had to think, you know, that was completely outside of my comfort zone of what's going to work. I didn't design the garden.
No.
But putting things in that space, and you have to, you have to take your link from the area. For example, in Barbados, you can't chrome anything. Everything. I thought the Cornish climate, coastal climate, and Devon coastal climate was harsh. Barbados is kind of next level. With the humidity and salt in the air.
Everything just pits and goes black.
Absolutely perishes.
And Caroline, what other design features are you getting involved in? Presumably containers and water features and things like that?
All sorts. We've done a lovely cabin in the grounds, which was really fun having. We had that made locally, and that was a lovely kind of go-to place. Shepherd's huts, you know, loggias, like outdoor dining areas. Lots of sort of water things. I mean, people do love their kind of hot tubs and saunas and all that kind of stuff now. And it's just about how you incorporate those so they're not eyesores. So, yeah, so they become part of the design, really.
Or death traps.
Or death traps, indeed. Yeah.
Nothing worse. As soon as the client mentions hot tub, it's kind of like a bit of a cringe moment, isn't it? Because you think of the sort of very heavily plasticated, they can be so ugly.
Either set in or kind of cedar clad and all that kind of thing is the way we go with it. Yeah.
And you find a nice solution.
Tasteful.
But I'll tell you what, it's so good for you. I have one, and I just have to say I go in it every day, and it's just the best therapy.
I'm jealous.
Water
right.
therapy, it's just the best.
Amazing. There have been huge advances recently in indoor and outdoor furniture, fabrics, and even rugs now we're seeing. What do designers need to know in order to be able to advise their clients about products for outdoor use?
I think the nice thing I think that's happened over the last few years is, you know, about 10 years ago, you'd never have chosen an outdoor fabric. No. They were really ugly, but they were practical.
Horrible colours.
Like garish, stripy.
Yeah.
And now you'd be hard pressed sometimes to tell the difference of whether or not it's an indoor fabric or an outdoor. We've just done a project where we've used outdoor rugs inside because they're just too pretty, but then they get the durability, which is lovely. So, but I think it's about knowing where your project is located and educating your client about whether or not something's practical, whether it's going to last. So, and just managing their expectations that actually fabrics, even if they're fade resistant,
they will have a life. Yeah. You can't leave them out all year round. Yeah. You can't leave a rug out all year round. You've got to move.
To
you've got to sort of look after things.
Yeah.
But there are so many brilliant fabric, things that the furniture's made from, like, you know, the powder coated aluminium, the polypropylene rope, all this kind of stuff. It's brilliant for outside.
So much better than it used to be.
And you don't actually always have to put a cushion on something to make it comfortable. And I think that's really important because, you know, the idea of something working with great ease, that you haven't got to do this great setup every time you want to go out and use your furniture. I think that's really important as well, because you've got all the storage issues with cushions and throws and all that kind of stuff, which is fine. You can design that all in. But it's also really nice if the sun suddenly comes out, which it sometimes does, you know, that you could walk out and you've suddenly got something dry to sit on. And I think that's really nice, and stuff that's easy to move around, provided it doesn't blow away. But, you know, that's, again, that's the choice of location for your project to think about how what the climate's like.
Yeah, it's thinking about, we have a big thing, especially, again, Devon and Cornwall, of things need to be heavy enough to stay in place, right? If we get a howling kind of southwesterly come through, you can have a big, lovely umbrella that just goes and it'll smash the house windows. You know, you really need to think about what you're doing outside, that it's practical. But I completely agree, there's nothing worse than thinking, oh, the sun's out. Right, I've got to go into the garage.
It's going to take an hour to get everything out.
Oh, it's gone again.
By which time the sun's gone.
Yeah, and again, that's the underfoot kind of thing as well, about what that material is, which might dry a bit quicker. You know, all those kind of things to make it, you step out and it's, suddenly it's like, I can use this space in 5 minutes.
And
go.
You can do some that with a mix of an architect in there and a landscape designer. You don't necessarily even have to have, you can have something fairly permanent set up, like a kind of poured concrete bench around a fire pit.
Exactly.
That, obviously it's a little bit comfier with a cushion, but it's set up there and it looks inviting regardless, rather than unpacking and taking chairs out.
But the thing you said earlier about the fabrics, that they are now so brilliant because they're kind of sunproof, you know, chlorine proof, salt proof, all this stuff, is that we use them a lot now inside anyway, because they're so
practical,
brilliant,
and they look
especially
nice
in, like, you know,
kitchens
window seats, conservatories, rooms that are going to get absolutely blasted, or you know, kids, whatever it might be. And then you have got that lovely relationship with inside outside, because you might repeat some of those things, so that could be your link. Which I think is really nice.
Yeah, no, that is a really nice idea.
And you talked earlier about the view from inside to outside.
Yes.
So what do you do to enhance that? What advice would you have?
I think it's kind of having something, you know, in your sight that you can sort of focus on. I think then the lighting kind of comes into that, really, really important, that you sort of, and the same rules for interiors, that you're not blasting everything with light. You're creating pockets of light. You're lighting things, not just everything. Mm. So I think that goes for gardens, and it's just lovely to have something, you know, at the end of a sort of a water feature, to have something lit at the end. It's just, and it just means that you're not looking out at kind of black space as well.
Well, I was going to say, because, I mean, we often have modern extensions that have like a whole wall of glass so that you are catching those garden views. But at night, that just turns into a horrible blackness, and you don't necessarily want to put curtains and make it look like a cinema.
And you're not, and you're not necessarily overlooked, you know, so it's just really nice to have some things that kind of highlighted.
And at night, especially in the countryside, when that dark is really dark,
yes,
you haven't got street lights or any sort of background lighting, some just really subtle lights. You don't need much in the garden,
do you, to
be able to actually see quite a lot and take your eye out.
And I also really like that idea of taking your lights out. I think that's really nice because, you know, again, with our harsh kind of environments that we work in, outdoor lighting doesn't always cope very well. You know, and often you're like, it's lasted for a couple of years and now it's failed, and it's a big old job then revisiting. Yeah. So I think this idea of, you know, again, all the sort of solar rechargeable lights have all just come on massively in the last few years. And there are so many lovely things that look good inside that can then be transported outside, and they'll survive quite happily outside, as long as, again, you look after them. But that inside-outside thing, I think, is really nice. And then taking stuff out to, like, oh, I'm making my lovely environment.
Wonderful LED rechargeable table lamps and things that then can become the centre of a table where everyone's eating.
Just instantly. And there's so many lovely designs to choose from.
Yeah.
I mean, and everyone's doing them now. I mean, they're just so accessible. So.
Yeah, you can get some great, that kind of festoon lighting that's really sort of indestructible, that suddenly transforms an outside space, doesn't it?
Mm.
I think as well, the line of sight, I don't know if you have this often, you have those sort of primary views of, like, the big windows going along the back of the house, the front of the house, straight out to the garden. But it's the sort of oblique views that I really like, where you've got kind of a ribbon window,
slender,
or something.
A glimpse of something.
Really subtle. And it's that sort of, you know, I don't know, third bedroom in the house that everyone wasn't that interested in at the start. It's all about the principal bedroom.
Yeah, but they get
and
that.
It's that one that has yes, that lovely little yes, snippet view, and it ends up being your favourite room in the house.
Totally.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. Hmm. So then apart from lighting, what other systems, kind of techie things, do you end up installing in gardens?
Well, we talked about water, haven't we?
Yeah.
I think water's a big thing, because I think the sound thing is really nice. I think it's lovely to have...
Oh, be able to play music to outside, yeah, yeah.
Music, yeah, sound of music, and then, you know, the running water, I think, is just so relaxing to have. Mm.
So music, yeah, so that implies, I suppose, garden speakers, does it? Sound systems?
Oh, well, yeah, it can be. Yeah. Or, you know, that. I mean, everything's so portable,
portable
these days,
isn't yeah,
it?
I don't
think...
You
can take it out.
But then I think it's outside rooms, right? It's having that sort of thing in your outside rooms. It is lighting. I'm trying to think of anything super techie that I've put.
Well, just systems generally. I mean, things like, I'm just thinking about things like watering systems.
Well, I was going to say irrigation is key,
yeah,
isn't it? Because
yeah,
for a lot of people, they're not there 365 days of the year. So, you know, they need to be able to switch on a system.
And then again, it's thinking about where your project is. So... Again, southwest, we're pretty lucky with our rain.
Yeah.
If you're doing something more tropical, that's
yeah,
when you might need to have that, yeah, irrigation powered. Or, and security as well is a lot,
yes,
for our clients.
Yes.
Like,
yes,
the garden
yes,
is a big space to access the house from, right?
I was going to ask about cameras, because outdoor cameras are a thing, not just for security, but for watching wildlife. So would you actually be involved in the choice of cameras?
Setting up a bird hide in the garden.
Yeah.
Love
oh,
it.
Wow.
No.
I think you'd call on the experts.
Cameras are like, yeah. cameras are, I don't know about you, they're the bane of my life.
They're pretty
so
ugly, aren't they?
Yeah. And it's normally like a big white plastic kind of fisheye looking thing on the outside of the house that's so sensitively done, and then you've got this kind of smoke detector, or it's just the things that the interior designers don't want and we have to have.
Yeah.
We'd normally be asking them to be powder coated and hidden away as much as possible.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'd be taking the advice of someone. Normally you'd have a specific
a security person.
Yes.
Yeah. Designer for security,
to
help you out with that.
Yeah.
Okay. And the other thing that fascinates me about gardens is they're not fixed things. They grow,
they
dynamically change.
Yeah.
So how much forethought are you putting into that tree's going to grow and overgrow into that direction, which is going to interfere with the sight line there? I mean, are you thinking about that?
Well, I think possibly, but I think, again, that's going to really come into the sort of remit of the landscape architect or the plants person who's doing that. But I mean, just thinking about that, I mean, I love using some of the elements that are in the garden, mature things like trees, you know, to like build seats around. And I think that it's really nice to kind of work with some of those really mature things. And, you know, they are really mature, so they're already there.
Mm.
They're not going to change that much. But
and that's a gift to you, right?
Yes.
As a designer,
yes,
it's like, oh, that's already there. Because otherwise you're putting in trees and the client never wants to pay for the fully grown option,
so
right?
20 years time.
Exactly. So then you're
not that time.
Yeah. I'm not interested at that point. So the client's kind of putting something in that's costing, you know, a couple of hundred quid, and it's a shrub that you're kind of hoping is going to blossom into what you need it to be in 20 years time. And it's waiting for it to, well, not even waiting for the trees to mature, you're literally waiting for the grass to bed in, aren't you? That's just been rolled out.
Yes.
And you're trying to take the photos of that finished project.
Yes.
And kind of a bit of Photoshop to get rid of those lines where the turf's still bedding in.
Yes.
So time spent in any garden is said to bring great mental health benefits.
Yes.
Caroline,
yes,
any thoughts?
Well, absolutely. I just think, well, we talked about being outdoors, so good for you, but I think nurturing and growing things is just so wonderful.
Yeah.
And the idea also of growing things that have a purpose, so growing things that you're going to eat, and that combination of edible things and things that you don't eat. But I mean, they do it really well at like somewhere like Rosemore, which is a lovely garden up in North Devon. But you know, where they combine all that planting, and I love all of that. So you sort of get a cabbage in amongst a beautiful flower. And you know, I think that's a lovely way to approach your garden design as well, so that you really do reap your rewards, because you're picking what you're eating, you know, what you're growing. It's great.
I mean, the
spending time outdoors, right? That's crucial from a mental health point of view.
Mm.
Exactly as Caroline says, the you know, if you can spend some time that you're investing in something and it's giving you something back, the proven benefits to mental health are huge. And spending time in nature, absolutely key. And I think it can look beautiful as well, like you say, a raised bed with kind of sleepers around it. And doesn't everyone love the idea of strolling outside and picking some lettuce to go with
edible
dinner?
Flowers and all of that kind of, all of that stuff is just great, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I wonder, do you ever get clients who don't want to use their garden?
Yes.
How do you work with those types?
I was going to say no to that.
I mean, so majority of clients are, you know, when you picture the client in your head, yes, I definitely do. So most of my clients, 100% would love their garden, but I've definitely got clients who, not necessarily they don't want to, you just know they're never going to touch it.
Right.
It's a sort of, almost like a piece of art hanging on the wall. And they want it kind of as maintenance-free as possible. And especially if it's a rental property, quite often, the maintenance that goes into a garden is huge.
Well, I suppose that then you're kind of moving on, aren't you? So it's like, I don't want to invest my time and my money into that because I'm actually...
Yeah.
I'm moving on. It's a short-term thing.
Yeah.
So I just want it to look lovely for the time being.
But I suppose the owner of the property too doesn't want... wants to make sure that their tenant isn't going to inadvertently trash you know, the plants that are there.
Yes,
so that has to be quite kind of low maintenance. I think perhaps the kind of people not wanting to get involved thing is much more of a city phenomenon, because we certainly have clients
who a city phenomenon.
Yes. You know, they might have a small terrace or a patio and they really are not interested. They just want to look at it and they want it always to look beautiful and never to have to touch it or prune it or trim it or water it.
That's the client I was thinking of. A client who's lit in London, and we did their terrace for them, beautiful outside terrace space, but probably wouldn't have been somewhere that they'd sit out a lot. It was almost like a kind of view from their space.
Yes,
so
something to look at.
Yeah, so we were putting things out there that were kind of permanently
going
to...
And it may not face the right direction. If it's north-facing, then, you know, and it gets no sun, then actually it's not ever going to be pleasant except on maybe half a dozen super hot days a year to sit out anyway.
Yes.
So it really is just a view.
Yeah.
Different approach required in that case.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
I think also kind of planting things, just talking about kind of well-being, you know, types of plants and flowers and things that attract, you know, butterflies, bees... All of the lovely wildlife, birds,
and
you know,
fragrance.
Yes,
as
and
well.
That fragrant. All of those things just make for a really lovely experience.
Yes, absolutely.
It's getting to know your client again, isn't it? It's getting to know what they like. Some clients will like a really neat and tidy, very clipped garden. Others, in the same way that they'll like a very neat and tidy interior, and they want their cushions fluffed in a specific way and their throws nice and neat and tidy over the arm and the sofa. Other clients like that relaxed linen, soft, lived in, lots of books vibe, which I would imagine normally passes on to their garden if they're happy with something a bit more rugged, a bit wilder.
So here's something controversial. Do you think people that like that shabby chic look are the bookworms? Are they the cottage garden people?
Yeah, good question.
Not always.
No,
I would say no. I don't think you can make that generalisation. I don't think you can pigeonhole people like that.
I was asking the question.
You know, I think there are really neat freaks who are like, you know, really intelligent, massive kind of readers and love their gardens. And then there are the people that, like you've described, who are much more kind of
particular. I think we force, as interior designers, I don't know about you, I feel like I force books on a lot of my clients. As in, I think books make a house.
I do too.
And really soften it.
And
it,
some stuff.
Where's the stuff?
But I have a Kindle.
I don't care about your Kindle. I want books on the shelf.
Where's the life, please?
Yeah.
I want to see the life.
Yeah.
And in terms of the dynamic nature of gardens, you're also thinking about your users. So they may be children, they may be elderly relatives, or people that you're designing for, clients you're designing for are getting older. So you have to think about that as well.
I think definitely. I mean, we're thinking about it so much with interiors as well, the whole future-proofing that's going on, in a way that we've never had those conversations before. Everyone's really interested in, you know, okay, if this is their home for life, you know, I'm going to be here in 20 years' time, okay, am I going
to
be
able to turn the taps on?
Am I going to be able to get up those stairs? I think I might just put provision for a lift in there. I'm not going to put it in for a minute, but it's there. You know, all of those conversations, and you know, that spreads to outside, doesn't it? You know, in terms of steps, in terms of raised beds, you know, all those kinds of things, which are really nice things. It doesn't have to look like it's not a decision.
Retirement home.
No, it's just that, you know, you're kind of designing for, you know, ease of use, which does apply to kids as well.
Yeah. aging in place, yeah. I think, is like a massive thing, right? People want to be able to stay in their home for as long as they can, or move relatives in with them, or what's the term for mixed living, where
multi-generational.
Thank you. Yeah. Multi-generational living, yes. Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think clients are far more aware of that. Mm. Designing, and I think, yeah, the safety aspect of having kids. I don't know about you, we have a lot of clients when I'm designing who are wanting grandchildren. Their children don't know about it.
So badly.
Okay, and the house is designed for grandchildren.
So they're putting in there's a climbing frame behind that hedge.
Subtle additions for a nursery for the grandchild they're desperately waiting for. I've had a lot of conversations with my clients about grandchildren that their children don't even know about.
Okay.
No pressure, kids, no pressure. Yeah.
Oh dear. And then sustainability. What do designers need to know about sustainability in gardens?
I think just, you know, choosing things that, you know, are going to last, which again is so to do with our interior design, isn't it? Choosing products that are, you know, are from suppliers who are building things that are going to last, and not just going to get something that's going to, you know, after a year outside is going to look terrible.
Yeah.
You know, choose your materials really carefully so that they give you, you know, a lifetime of use.
And that they're, they're investing a little bit more early on, as in something you spend a little bit more money on your exterior furniture, same as interior furniture, but more key, I think, for exterior.
Yeah.
It will last you longer. So actually, you know, something too flimsy outside is going to impact that way quicker than an interior piece of furniture. Yes. So it's really important to choose something that, yeah, is going to stand the test of time.
Not just treated as disposable.
Yeah, out with fast fashion.
But what about kind of climate change and the way, you know, I hear, you know, I watch Gardeners Question Time like everybody else does, and, you know, we hear all this talk about certain things not growing anymore, plants, Mediterranean plants coming in, that kind of whole change in style of gardens, that surely has got to be having an impact on the garden rooms that we're discussing and the way they're laid out. Are you seeing that sort of change?
Well, I think, again, I'd probably refer to the kind of the plants people on this, because they're going to be more genned up on how things are going to cope.
It's definitely changing in interiors, right? As in, we get so many more clients now looking at climate controlled interiors because they know their houses are going to be heating up.
A lot warmer, yeah.
So lots more sort of climate control exterior, and with certainly with exterior rooms as well. I think it's happening, right? And but you're right, I think it's more, again, my weak knowledge of plants, I wouldn't be the person to advise on that, but I definitely would imagine that the garden designer would be.
So if you're working with clients then to get the kind of hard landscaping parts right, so that that's suiting the client's brief and you've kind of ticked all those boxes, do you ever get, are you responsible for bringing in that plants person ever? Do you have garden people that you work with?
We have done, but I mean, often our clients will have they put their team together, get their architect, their interior designer, their landscape architect, their gardeners, you know, and that they bring all of that team together as one.
Yeah, sometimes it's client choice, sometimes it can be architect's recommendation, sometimes it's ours. Often, especially I think in the Southwest, if we've got clients who are second homeowners and therefore don't know the area, we might be asked to put someone forward there. So it tends to be that the architect's appointed first, right, then us, sometimes about the same time, and then the client sometimes will think about the exterior, or we might suggest, that's not our area of expertise, this is the person I would recommend.
Are those happy collaborations, or do you find there's a bit of treading on toes that goes on?
Oh, I tend to find with garden designers it's peachy. It's more the architect. Is that bad?
Yeah, I think it's less so now. I think, you know, if you'd have asked that question a decade ago, I'd have said, yeah, it's can be tricky. But I think now everyone expects to work in a team.
Yeah.
Everyone expects there to be an expert in their field. And I think that's just how it should be, and it's lovely. And it's lovely having a conversation with someone who's going to do all that planting and presenting your interior schemes to them, and for them to understand what you're trying to achieve, and then have that dialogue. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, you're all trying to get the best outcome for the client.
Yes.
And so having all of those experts working together is just a dream.
Yeah.
And it's lovely when the client says, oh, you're all playing nicely together. And yes, we are. And that, you know, why shouldn't you? It's not a competition.
Yeah, and also it's experts in their fields. Like we, in the same way as, well, as Carol and I both said, we would get a garden designer in. We're not experts necessarily on plants. You wouldn't expect the garden designer to come in and do the interior.
No.
So it's very much kind of use your skill set to its best and having those conversations really early on with the architect, with the lighting designer, with the contractor, with the garden designer, of where your remit stops and their remit starts. Mm. And that varies, that grey area in between varies from project to project, doesn't it?
So I think it's about being really transparent, isn't it? So everyone understands.
I'm going to be doing the architraves, or I'm doing
exactly.
the skirting.
All of that. Doors who's doing that.
Yeah, exactly. And but also
Caroline's
joining
doing
up.
The hot tub.
Yeah, I'll do the hot tub.
Caroline's in charge of hot
tub. I really recommend a hot tub. I'm a convert.
And yeah, where it starts and stops. So, and again, not just kind of going, well, my remit is up here to the hard landscaping, and then I stop and hand over to you.
Because then it'll look like that.
Exactly.
It won't be joined
up. Disjointed. Yeah.
I was just thinking about two other things too. We haven't discussed swimming pools or tennis courts.
Oh, yes. Oh my goodness. Everyone needs one.
I didn't know about those, actually. Yeah, because they're massive, aren't they?
Yeah.
The whole swimming pool.
Yeah.
I mean,
I've yet to do a tennis court.
So then you'll have a swimming pool contractor as well that you then have to work with because you've got a plant room associated with that and all the kit, and that all has to go somewhere. Yeah.
And do you get involved in the tiling that goes in the swimming pool?
Yeah, totally. It's 100%.
Because we do lots of spa design, so that's for us, it's like massive comfort zone, and we're really interested in tiles.
Interesting.
I was going to say.
And what the watercolour is.
Yes.
Yeah, so, I don't
and,
want
you
know,
and what you step out onto and how that then goes, and you don't fall over and slip over because it's slippy. You know, all of those things. Yeah.
I don't want a dolphin.
No dolphins.
On the
no dolphins
pool.
Allowed.
Thanks.
No.
A swan?
No.
No, I'm not into swan either. I don't want any of those.
No.
Save those for the
natural world.
Yeah. I like a really nice dark green pool tile, so it looks
teal,
like a kind of
mountain pool.
So it feels
nice.
I think, kind of.
Not too dark that it looks like you're not
swampy.
You don't know where you're going.
Yeah. So 100%. We definitely want to be involved in tiles, please.
Fascinating. Okay.
Last
one.
Okay, fine. So, what is the one piece of advice you'd give to an interior designer looking to undertake a garden design for a client?
Yeah, okay. Have a really good... So if you're going to tackle designing a garden, gen up. I mean, for me, my one piece of advice would be like get an expert in, get them to do the exterior with you because it would just be... I think it's, playing to your strengths. And if you don't know anything about it and your client is asking you to design the garden, hands up and say, I can't, but I know someone else who can help with this, and this is where we cross over, but I'm not going to take it on wholly myself because it's not my area of expertise. That would be
I totally
my
agree.
Advice.
I was going to say exactly the same. Get the expert in to work alongside. But I also stand by what I said earlier about making arrangements that are easy to kind of access and use straight away. I think that's really important.
I think that's a great tip.
Because of our climate.
Yeah.
You know, if you live in the kind of sunny Mallorca or something and it's always dry and lovely, it's fine. But, you know, for us, it's these kind of suddenly as an hour opportunity, isn't there, to get out and do it. So
quick, throw the cushions out, we're out.
Have it ready to go.
Or just to be able to wander out with your book and your cup of coffee.
And sit straight away.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that would be my key.
Or your Kindle.
Yeah.
Or your Kindle.
Kindles are
now a Kindle. But,
wonderful. Yeah. Thanks so much. Let's have a round of applause. Thank you to our live audience and to our hosts here at Design Central Southwest. We do hope you've enjoyed this episode, and please do get in touch on our social channels at Interior Design Business Pod to share any feedback. The Interior Design Business is a Wildwood Plus production.